Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to another episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today I've got Dr. Christina McMullen with me. She's a naturopath. She works with Longevity Health in Roswell, Georgia. And we're going to actually kind of touch on a couple different things today. And first, I'm going to ask her if we can just kind of start out with the basics. There are so many times, and I recall looking back on my journey too, you know, it took me 7 years to get a diagnosis. And when I finally got one, other than you're crazy, I thought, okay, let's just go kill this thing. And oftentimes people just jump into the kill, 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 kill. And they don't realize there are so many other layers to this journey. And oftentimes if we overkill, we're not detoxing properly, our pathways are closed. So many things can truly hinder our healing. And so I know for me personally, I shout about this all the time on social media because there are many layers that we need to cover. And so I'm excited that Dr. Christina is open to just kind of just reversing back just to the basics and talking about the things and ways that we can support our bodies. And then we're going to dive into what she really specializes in is in children. And we're going to talk about Lyme and the coordination, the correlation between PANS, PANDAS, all the stuff. So a couple different things going on here. So I'm super excited for this episode. Dr. Christina McMullen, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yes, I think it's going to be a great episode with just a lot of what may seem like some basic information at first, right? But man, is it some powerful information that I'm sure you're going to share with us because so many people sound silly, right? You want me to breathe deeply. You want me to help my nervous system. Like, no, I've got Lyme. I need to kill it and get well, right? So I can understand how people think that way, but to hear it from an actual doctor to the listeners instead of just me saying, no, you have to do more than that. So I'm excited and I appreciate your willingness to kind of just go back to the basics for a little bit with me.
Yeah, I love going back to the basics. I mean, I think as we're just creatures of nature, habit where we can go down these rabbit trails and try and find the latest and greatest, newest, you know, treatment plan or therapy when, I mean, the reality is our bodies were designed to heal themselves. And if we just give them the resource, give our body the resources that it really needs, so much of our healing journey can be done just by supporting our natural processes. So
isn't it amazing? We are amazing beings. And yeah, I can so relate to what you just said. We want to follow the latest, the greatest. What's the next thing? Because within the Lyme community, I see a lot that people will start, you know, a protocol. And then a couple weeks later, maybe a month later, well, so-and-so got well by doing A, B, and C. And they just jump all over the place. And I get it, right? I've been there. I was in that rat race. I was in the, you know, the Lyme brain, the brain fog, and everything was so overwhelming. And anytime I heard like a success story, I'm like, I want to do that, you know, and that's really not how we should kind of steer our path. And I know we can get sucked into, you know, purchasing a bunch of modalities to get us well. And not saying all of them are bad. You know, during my journey, I purchased, I don't know, maybe five things that were of significant cost, but they're five things I can use forever, right? In just your everyday living, helping your body detox. And so it's just important to allocate our finances when we're going through this journey. And so I know you're going to share some great tips with us on things that we can do at home that don't even cost money. So I'm just going to let you kind of start wherever you want to do it. Talk about how amazing our body is.
Okay. Well, I mean, just to kind of intro into that, I think the biggest thing that everyone forgets is stress will squash everything. And especially if you are super worried and stressed out and concerned about your health, especially any type of anybody dealing with a chronic health condition, I mean, that's on the forefront of their mind and they're constantly worrying, constantly trying to find the newest thing that's going to be, the thing that fixed them, the thing that healed them. But our nervous system is really what controls. We have that fight or flight, or we have that rest and repair, and we can't be in both stages at the same time. So the first thing to really, really hone in on for people is we have to get rid of the stress or figure out how to manage that. Whether that be, finding your hobby or finding the thing that brings you joy and you can spend time doing it. Heart rate variability can be very, very effective. Tapping, different things that we can do to at home again, free, to help kind of get into that parasympathetic rest and digest so that our adrenal glands are calmed down and then our nervous system can actually switch into the repair side of things. So
And
that's
with
huge.
that, yes, it is. And I love that you just started it right off with stress, right? So it's, I kind of tie it into, we want to get rid of toxins in our life, right? But toxins doesn't necessarily mean food we're ingesting or environmental. People can be toxic to us as well. And a lot of times these people can bring stress to us on top of our own stress, worrying about our health and all of that. But it is such a huge part of this healing. So can you just reiterate to me or the listeners for the first time from you that when we're doing some of these things that you mentioned, whether it's tapping or, breathing or meditation, we may not just have that instant gratification, like we finished and, oh my gosh, I'm done. That was amazing, right? So, can you talk a little bit about, consistency, I guess is the word that I want to use. Nothing, we do live in a world of instant gratification, unfortunately, right? But just maybe dive a little bit deeper on just the importance of continuing to utilize tools and stuff to support your body at home. Maybe not understanding what it's doing, or you know what I'm saying?
I mean, yes, that the stress part and the positive mindset and all of that side of things, I think it's definitely the stuff that's easier said than done. You can tell someone, oh, don't
For
worry about
sure.
that.
Yeah.
And
Oh, okay.
okay, great, but I'm still going to worry about it. So, I mean, that's where the repetition and just slowly just changing that mindset and that viewpoint and that outlook of everything, which is not going to come overnight. We've lived our lives however many years one way. It's going to take time to shift gears into a different way of thinking and living and just perceiving the world around us. Just like when we're in school, we don't learn something right away. We have to practice it over and over again. And then it becomes second nature. When we start driving, we're constantly thinking about stuff. Oh my gosh, who's around me? Where's the red light? And then after you drive for so many years, next thing you know, you're like, oh, I haven't really, kind of scarily, haven't paid too much attention, or I can't recall certain things, but it's because it's just been so much of that new habit and that new lifestyle that we've formed. And it's the same thing with how we perceive the world around us, how we allow different, environmental stressors or people stressors, work, all of that, our sleeping habits. We can very easily stay up late at night, but if we make it a consistent effort to get to bed at a certain time and get those hours of sleep, yeah, it takes a little bit of a practice to turn that into a habit, but then it becomes a habit and it becomes a new mindset and a new outlook. And I mean,
And it
so many
doesn't,
things change.
yeah, and it doesn't feel so overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, I have to work on this. I have to work. And I love your analogy with driving, right? Like you could think, I don't even remember how many stoplights I went through. You know what I mean? Whereas before, it's like, okay, there, you know what I mean? Yeah, just like what you said. So that was a really good analogy for that. But yeah, just the practice makes perfect. And pick one or two things to work on, right? Because, like you
Right.
said, n nothing, so many things are so much easier said than done.
And I tell people all the time, I want these things that we're talking about to stick and be your new normal. So even when we're talking about dietary things, I rarely tell someone you need to avoid all of these things moving forward right now. I say, pick a few items that are in your pantry or staples in your diet and take a couple of weeks to find a replacement or find something that you enjoy aside from that. Because then you don't feel like you're depriving your entire diet and you're never going to get these enjoyable foods or these foods that you like again. You're taking it step by step, and then you see, oh, this is a good compromise or this is a good alternative, and then you don't feel like you're missing out necessarily, and then you can move on to the next thing and the next thing. And I mean, that goes for the stress and lifestyle side of it as well. If you just pick one thing at a time, over the course of a few months to a year, you can look back and so many changes have been made, and you don't feel like you've necessarily made this like drastic 180 turn to do so.
Oh gosh, I wish I could just replay that last minute on replay for a lot of people because it is, it's so important. Here we are, we're sick, right? Whether it's you, your child, like there's a lot of trauma going on within this family or yourself going through this journey. And you go and you meet with a practitioner and they're like, you can't do this, you can't eat that, you can't do this. Oh my gosh, I'm sick. How am I supposed to even just for one, understand what you just said. And then for two, just to turn my world upside down overnight. It is overwhelming. Everything about the journey is overwhelming. So slow and steady can win the race, right? You just said
Oh,
it.
100%. Yep.
And it is nicer. And, I know for me, when I had to cut out so many things during my journey, I can eat them all again and I have zero reactions to them. So you may be that same way too. Not everything is forever, but there's so many things you're going to learn along this journey that you are just going to continue doing all of them because you know they're good for you. You feel good, but then you can have that cheat day, right? Where you
Right.
just don't worry about anything. When the fair comes along, I don't care. I go to the fair. I don't know. It depends on how many hours there. I'll have two, three, four corn dogs, right? It's my favorite thing. I get them once a year and I don't beat myself up over it. And nor does my body, generally react to them. And a lot of times that can be the same for everybody that heals, right? Once we kind of heal our body, it can be opened up to more things that would normally would have affected it. So slow and steady, right?
Yep. Totally.
So when you, if we could just pause a little bit on the diet. So no, we're not going to tell them, cut this out, cut that out. But just in your opinion, working with the patients that you work with, what are some of the biggest things that you feel are interacting or inhibiting some patients from maybe getting well or getting well faster? I hear a lot about gluten, mostly inflammatory foods and stuff like that. Is there just a couple things that are really high on your radar?
The biggest thing for anyone, which it's not, I won't even, I call it food because in America it's food. It's all the ultra processed packaged Frankenfood. I mean, that hands down is something that I think people need to really, just sick or not, need to really eliminate as much as you can. That's not to say my kids and I don't have a couple of snack items in our pantry and we'll eat them, but that's not a normal everyday thing. From a food, like a whole food type standpoint, yes, I do see a lot with corn and soy and dairy and gluten, but I also see on the flip side people who eat really high quality of those categories. Like they're getting a raw A2 grass-fed milk or cheeses, or they're milling their own grains that are organic and making homemade sourdough. Corn's kind of hard to not find non-genetically modified these days,
Right.
but I think if we go back to it, people really weren't having major reactions to food 20, 30, 40 years ago.
when it was food, right?
So I don't, I think, I mean, yes, there's still a percentage of the population that's going to actually have reactions to those foods. But I think the skyrocketed increase in just the inflammatory load that so many of these foods put on our system are what is being done to these crops and these food items before they make it into our kitchen and onto our table. So,
So
and
not
that's a big.
necessarily the what, but the type. Like you just mentioned, if you're eating healthy and natural of these, gluten or dairy, then that of course is going to be the better choice.
I tell people all the time, I'd rather see you have a sprouted organic piece of toast than honestly half the gluten-free breads out there. Because if you look at the label of a gluten-free toast, it's full of sugar and color oils and other additives and preservatives that probably are causing just as much inflammation as the gluten of another piece of toast. But if you find the higher quality things and then eat it within moderation, I find that's where people can really kind of find a happy medium and really get that inflammation down and the nutrients that they need.
Yeah, good tips, good tips. So, as far as like kind of boosting our natural immunity, right? And this can go whether you're listening because you have a child dealing with Lyme or a chronic illness, maybe you're healthy, but we're also just live in a world where, there's a lot of toxins in there and we all catch the virus and the colds and so don't tune out just because you don't have Lyme, right? Like, what are some of the ways because and I know that there's, this the gut combination kind of rules everything, right? So if we can kind of talk about maybe some ways to help boost our immunity and then just even merge it in with things to help our gut health.
So obviously, there's a reason why food should be, front line. Food is treat food as medicine, because it can either, I say every bite of food, you're either preventing disease or you're helping to promote it based off of what you're eating. So again, those pro-inflammatory processed foods, sugar is hands down probably the biggest suppressor to all of our immune system cells. I mean, I kind of joke, but don't say that cold and flu season starts after Halloween and really doesn't clear up until after Easter. And it's
That's funny, but true, and it makes sense, right?
candy and pies and desserts and then more treats and chocolate and, which just we're exposing our bodies to so much sugar, probably while also being more indoors and not getting all the vitamin D that we need from the sun, but it is part of that perfect storm. So yes, we can indulge on a couple of treats for the holidays, but we really want to balance that out with lots of those nutrient-dense foods, nourishing foods that are full of color and phytonutrients and minerals. So, proteins. I'm a big fan of as many sulfur-rich cruciferous vegetables as possible, your broccolis, cauliflowers, even garlic and onion. I mean, just season your food with as much of that as possible. But our main antioxidant, glutathione, needs a lot, it requires a lot of sulfur-rich compounds. That's one of the things as the precursors for our body to produce that glutathione, which is going to help liver detoxification. It actually is really helpful for lung health. So if you do get a respiratory cold, if you have ample amounts of glutathione, your lungs aren't going to be quite as affected. And then
And
warming
glutathione,
foods.
I love glutathione. Can you talk a little bit about, because I know that, glutathione, we all need it, right? And we definitely need it, and our body can produce it. It's really hard to supplement with glutathione.
It is. It's very unstable. And degrades very quickly, especially with stomach acid in around stomach acid. So if you're taking a supplement, you want to make sure that it's a liposomal glutathione. So the way that the liposomes wrap the fat around the glutathione, it kind of protects it and allows it to get into the bloodstream. most of those will have you even hold them under your tongue to get a little bit of that sublingual absorption before it even gets into into your stomach. Obviously, IVs can be an option. Those can be kind of pricey too, though, especially if you're trying to go pretty consistently.
Right. And even with that, I just remember a doctor many years ago, we were talking about glutathione and how to get even an accurate blood test. They said a lot of times from the time you draw the blood, right, to the time it gets to the lab, the levels have dropped, which to me is just it's kind of mind-blowing. So I know I like to talk a lot about glutathione because like you just mentioned, it has so many amazing benefits and properties to it, and it's much needed, but it's really hard to get.
But our bodies produce it. So if we give the nutrients that we need, amino acids, those sulfur-rich compounds from our foods, Epsom salt baths. Epsom salts are actually a magnesium sulfate. So you're giving your body more of those sulfur compounds to help.
Oh.
That's why they're really good for detoxification, because they increase your body's glutathione levels. And again, who doesn't love taking a warm bath and soaking?
Right. I didn't know
And
that.
then,
That's good to know.
yeah. And then hydration, I guess I would say, is another big dietary one, especially in the winter. Everything's drying out. We've got heat going on in the house. It's cold outside, and our kidneys are another major detox organ, and they require a lot of fluid to function properly. So, making sure we're drinking half our body weight in ounces of water every day and adding a little bit more in if we're drinking coffee or doing other things that are a little bit more dehydrating. So those, dietary wise, that's kind of the things I like to focus on. And then sleep, obviously, we need to be getting our sleep. We can't be
Yes.
burning the candle at both ends. It's affecting that fight or flight adrenal response, our cortisol levels, and our cells can't heal and rejuvenate if we're not sleeping. So that's another very important thing to focus on. And then, like I said, Epsom salt baths, great, great therapy that you can do at home for very, very cheap. Red light therapy is something people talk about all the time. They don't always tell you that as the sun rises and sets, there's a lot of red light in the air. So get outside, even if it's not too cold, get your feet in the dirt to kind of add some grounding. And watch the sunrise and watch the sunset and get that natural red light therapy from the earth. You don't have to go out and buy a, couple $100 red light machine to get the benefits to that.
Right. Isn't it
And
amazing how many just natural resources are at our fingertips to
oh yeah.
help support our body? And if I go back years, maybe the beginning of my journey, I would probably think these people telling me this are kind of crazy. I'm like, oh, like, what's that going to do for you? Right. Oftentimes we have to go through that journey. We don't know what we don't know until we learn it firsthand. And so that's why I love to th that we're having this conversation because it's such simple things that we can do that truly can make a difference in our healing. But yes, grab onto anything free.
Yep. And even sweating. You know, yes, a sauna is amazing, but you don't have to necessarily sweat in the sauna. Make your bath water a little bit hotter, or if you're feeling up to it, do a little bit of a workout or a jog to get you, and you don't have to pour out sweat. You just need to get that glisten to kind of get things moving. You can manually rub your hands over certain parts of your body to get some lymphatic massage going. I'm a big fan of supporting the vagus nerve as well. So humming, chanting, singing at the very end of a shower, turn that water cold for 10 seconds, that helps to reset that nervous system. Because again, if your nervous system's in that fight or flight, you could be doing all of these amazing things, but you're not in that right state to actually heal properly.
Right. So, can you, for the listeners that may be new to this journey, can you talk about what the vagus nerve is? what the important role it plays in our body.
It really is kind of the master regulator for so much of our nervous system and is a huge highway to that gut-brain connection. And I've seen it time and time again where we're doing all the things, but if that kind of anxiousness or that kind of heightened sensitivity to things in our environment from our nervous system is still there, and we need to kind of reset that vagus nerve to kind of calm it down, we're going to have so many roadblocks along the way. So, and again, it's super, it's, you know, there's again devices that you can use to stimulate that vagus nerve, but deep breathing, belly breathing, singing, chanting, cold shower, all of that is just as efficient, and you can do it more frequently and keep that into the routine to just make sure that nervous system is in a good spot.
Yes, I love that. Such great tips. And I even tell people, jump on Amazon. They have this little handheld $5 massager, right? It's one of my
Yeah.
favorite things. I'll do my vagus nerves, on
Yeah.
obviously nobody can see us, but from your ears down kind of to your collarbone, right? The sides of both of your neck is where your vagus nerve is. And it's
Right.
great to use a little massager or jump on YouTube and look at where hundreds of our lymph nodes are. Take that massager, run over your lymph nodes. There's, just some easy things that we can do, because oftentimes people are kind of bed bound, like you mentioned. You don't have to do a lot to sweat, but some of us literally maybe can't get out of bed, and so they don't have a lot of movement. Obviously can't do a rebounder, right? But you can do the dry brushing or the massaging
Right.
yourself. Or when there's a will, there's a way. There's always something that you guys can do at home, no matter what state you're in and no matter what state your finances are in. There's always something that you can do to help heal your body. And that's what I always like to impress upon, because Dr. Christina, this can be an expensive journey, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
Oh, yeah.
more lately, we've been hearing a lot more of these celebrities coming out with Lyme disease. And then what I see on social media is, well, yeah, they can get better because they can afford it. And I know it kind of seems like that. And so many of us spend an exorbitant amount of money on this. But like me, I didn't know any better, right? Had I known, I didn't have to spend $1 million out of pocket, which, by the way, I did not have, right? But that's what it cost me to get a diagnosis and to get well. And it doesn't have to. I didn't know what I didn't know. And so when you hear people in the community say that, I can't afford a doctor, can't afford anything, I'm just going to lay here and, wither away, don't let that happen, because you, Dr. Christina, are sharing so many amazing tips with the listeners right now of things that everybody can do. Everybody. There's no reason that you can't do the majority of the things that you've mentioned.
Yeah, so much can be healed or improved if we just really get back to those basics and focus on those. And like I said, the body will do its magical thing and start healing by itself.
Because we are amazing. Well, thank you so much for just truly, I think oftentimes in life, no matter what we're doing through, whether it's raising a family or your career or whatever, oftentimes we just overdo things. We get so wrapped up in the moment that we just really forget going back to the basics. And so, truly, thank you for going back to the basics with me.
Yeah.
So now let's kind of just do a big transition. I know that you're very into, kind of treating children is your specialty, and PANS and PANDAS, the Lyme correlation. So I'm just going to let you kind of share with us what you will. Like, obviously we all know what Lyme is, right? But maybe if you can kind of just first start with, what is PANS? What is PANDAS? What's the correlation to Lyme? If you have Lyme, do you automatically have those? Or if you have those, do you automatically have Lyme? Just kind of give us a, 101 lesson on what they are.
So PANDAS and PANS are both acronyms. PANDAS stands for Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorder Associated with Streptococcal Infection. So it's when a strep infection actually can get it cross that blood-brain barrier and start targeting a part of our brain called the basal ganglia, which is responsible for memory, attention, learning, body movements, you name it. It covers a lot of responsibilities and functions for our body. And eventually we are in an autoimmune state, so then our own cells, our immune system is attacking our own cells. And we see a lot of, typically the presentation is a drastic, sudden, almost like overnight change of a what you would think of as a carefree, happy-go-lucky child to somebody who's riddled with anxiety. Tons and tons of OCD behaviors. They might develop motor or verbal tics. They might regress in their handwriting or their math skills or even bedwetting again. Some of them will get really, really dark, intrusive thoughts regarding death, actually. Not necessarily acting on it, but just thoughts of death. Like I had a girl one time that as she would walk around her house, she would ask her parents to put more pictures of her around so that they would remember what she looked like when she wasn't there anymore. So it's definitely a major attack on the brain and functioning of the brain from a strep infection. Now, PANS was developed or coined shortly after pandas to kind of cover the cases that were very similar and presented very much the same way, but without a positive strep infection that had happened a little bit leading up to it. So PANS stands for Pediatric Auto Onset Neuropsychiatric Syndrome. So it's essentially the same thing. We've got something triggering an autoimmune response and brain inflammation. But it could be any other type of pathogen or even potentially environmental triggers. Like I find mold, of course, is a big underlying factor for PANS.
So let me make sure I've got this straight, right? Because I want to make sure I got it straight so I know the listeners are getting it straight. That was a fantastic description of that. So, am I correct in saying pans and pandas are the same thing, but it's where they came from or how you got it in a sense?
More or less. So originally, pandas and pans, before those two acronyms came to be, the first proposal, I guess you should say, was PITANS, which stood for Pediatric Infection Triggered Autoimmune Disorders, autoimmune psychiatric disorders. So, yeah, they really cover the umbrella casing of everything, but then pandas is the association to a recent strep infection. That's what seems to be that final straw and that trigger. Whereas PANS, now, the growing list of things that we have as those triggers, like I said, mold, Lyme, Borrelia, Bartonella. Bartonella, I think, is one of the biggest ones. Mycoplasma bacteria, different herpes viruses. Flu has been a couple cases, and then since the pandemic, COVID has been another viral infection that I see be a really big trigger for PANS.
Okay, so limes. There's so many people who says it's not limes. I don't know that I've ever said limes in my life. Don't know where that came from. Trying to get out too many words too fast, right? So lime is more associated with pans. Like if you
Right.
have pans, there might be a chance that you have, lime or mold or something like that.
I say yes,
Interesting.
but I do like to kind of have a little side note. And, when we're dealing with any type of autoimmune condition, I'm always looking for a full bucket of multiple things, So, yes, strep may have been that final straw in PANDA's children, but it's still not uncommon to still see other pathogens like Borrelia or mycoplasmas or mold, even. Because it's that constant building and filling up of someone's bucket with all of these things that eventually spills over into that autoimmune state. So
Got
there
it.
is still a little overlap, but if someone
Okay.
says, I have PANS from, I mean, that's where you're going to talk more about Lyme and co-infections than you are PANDAS.
Got it. Okay. I think I understand it much more clearer than I have before. So thank you for breaking that down so well. Can we, and I'm kind of throwing you off guard here, can we talk a little bit about mold? So, I don't, I'm so thankful that it was not part of my journey. So I know a lot more now in the last couple of years than I did, 5 years ago, for sure, because I'm trying to learn about it because it's a big topic within
It
this community and can cause some pretty detrimental, it's not good. It's not good, right? So just the first thing that popped into my mind is, and this is maybe a hypothetical question, and maybe there's not even an answer to it, but just out of my own curious mind, when the weather turns colder outside and a lot of times the inside of your windows in your home maybe, get extra cold or get some condensation on it. If somebody has mold in their home, and I guess maybe the reason I'm asking this is because you said, PANS could kind of stem, maybe from mold, but also children can react overnight, right? Like just a flip of a switch. So that's what made me think of this question is, so when it, if say you have a child and you're living in mold, whether you know it or not, right? So you're living in mold and it's never affected your child or seemed to be. And then all of a sudden, winter months come, things are colder, you're feeling more moisture in the home. Is it possible for those mycotoxins to be kicked up more when you have just more of that, what would normally be safe condensation around the home?
Yeah, so I mean, moisture is really what allows those molds to the spores to release those toxic mycotoxins, because that's really the dangerous part. We don't want to be inhaling those mycotoxins, those
Right.
what the spores or what the molds is releasing out into the air. And so that will change a little bit from season to season. We'll have higher amounts of moisture in a house, a higher humidity. That will create more of that toxic mycotoxin exposure or into the air, release into the air. Whereas if it's drier and cooler, you might not get quite as much of that. You might still have mold in the house, but it's not going to be as active as if when you have that higher humidity and higher moisture. So yeah, to some extent.
Okay. Just was curious. Inquiring minds want to know, right?
Right.
I often think that, if I'm thinking of this question, somebody else is too, right? So let me just ask it. Okay. So much information on that and good information too. And just so many things to keep an eye on with your children, whether Lyme is even in the picture or not, some of these overnight triggering things from, something maybe that was caused from strep or mold, or you mentioned a few other things, that could bring on the pan. So super great information. Awareness is everything when it comes to anything involving our health, right? Awareness, the more we know.
Oh, it totally is. And for kids, I mean, even adults, I always tell people, like, if you feel like something's off, like, listen to that gut, listen to that intuition, because it's telling you something for a reason. There, you just don't brush it off because, especially with kids, unfortunately, something will come up and somebody will bring their kid to the pediatrician or even just mention it at like an annual visit. And the response is, oh, well, they should grow out of it. That's fine. Like, no biggie. But if you're bothered enough by it to mention it, then there's probably a good chance that there is something that's causing that and there is something that's off. And sometimes a lot of times it is just trying to figure out what in the environment could be cleaned up and fixed or corrected.
Right. And especially if there's more than one thing that you're concerned with,
right?
Right.
Like maybe over in between, your annual visits or whatever, you notice, well, gosh, in the last year, there's two new things now that's going on. That can be a trigger too, that no, it's not something he's going to grow out of. Like something is going on. There's a root to something, and everything comes from somewhere, right? So there's a root
Right.
to everything that's going on in your body. So can you, again, probably not a cut and dry answer, but could you maybe walk us through, like, when treating a child with Lyme disease, whether it's Lyme or the co-infections, or PANS, right? Yes, PANS. Like, kind of what is your, maybe your stepping stone, kind of like your ABC order? What do you do? Obviously, we need to do testing, figure out what we're actually dealing with. But then, and I know, each child is going to be individualized, I'm assuming.
Right.
But there can be a little bit of a kind of a guideline, like, right? Like, what do you look for first, or what kind of steps do you address
Yeah, I
first?
would say there's definitely a roadmap for kind of what you can
Roadmap. There
expect.
you go. Yes, that's the
There you
word I
go.
want.
So with at my practice, or the practice I work at, we don't do a whole lot of blood work. We can order it. We do more bioenergetic testing where we energetically scan the body and kind of see what disturbances are being brought on by different pathogens. So, which is great. A, we get results very quickly. B, for kids, they're not getting poked and prodded with needles. And sadly, so many of these kids that are coming to me, they're terrified to even step through the door because they're afraid another doctor is going to poke them with something. And so, we'll get a report. And so, based off of the different types of pathogens or environmental toxins, we can, but even then, first looking at the stressors to the organs, because again, if the adrenals are in fight or flight, if we're our gut is all inflamed and we're not absorbing our nutrients properly and we're not going to the bathroom on a regular basis, if we're dehydrated, if our lymphatic system is congested, I can throw all of our herbs at these pathogens and they aren't going to work as well. And they're probably going to make you feel even worse initially and cause that Herxheimer's reaction that I'm sure people have talked about at
Many
great
times,
length.
right? We don't like that word.
No. So, we always want to support those organs and systems and those elimination pathways. So, what can we do to get them moving again? Like, can we get the lymphatic system moving? How are we going to get the bowels moving? How are we going to support the gut, and bring down inflammation? I would say for Lyme, even if it's just Lyme that hasn't gone into an autoimmune state and causing more of those PANS, OCD, anxieties, fears, and things like that, we still want to get the inflammation down. So what lifestyle changes and what herbs are we going to get used to get the inflammation down? Then how are we going to address the pathogens and the toxins? How are we going to detox from those? How are we going to kill the pathogens? How are we going to eliminate the heavy metals or the molds or whatever else might be showing up? And then how do we reset and retrain the immune system so that, especially in a PANS case or even PANDAS, we'll get a kid in those worlds, it's called a flare. When kids are highly symptomatic, we say the kid's flaring, the kid's in a flare. But then we can get them out and we can get them feeling better and doing well. But there is a period where I say the parents and the family is kind of walking on eggshells. They're like, okay, we got this under control. We're doing great. But what do I do when cold and flu season comes around again? Or
When's
how
the
do I,
next shoe gonna drop, right?
right? How am I going to be okay with my kid going out and playing in the feet in the backyard, not terrified of another tick bite? And so that last tier to recovery and healing is getting that immune system retrained so that I say we're resilient. Like you said, with the foods, we need to avoid certain things, but then we've gotten the body in a healthy enough state to where one exposure to something isn't gonna throw everything off again. So I always say that the three-tiered or three-pronged approach is address the inflammation, address the pathogens and the toxins, and then address the immune system and how it's functioning and responding to the things that we're never going to be able to fully avoid in life.
Right. So you mentioned a few minutes ago a flare. So what's the difference between a flare and a herx? Right. I hear this a lot in the community. What's a flare? What's a herx? Maybe it's hard to tell, and especially probably in children, right?
It can be a little hard to tell. A herx is normally brought on when you start a new detox prep, a new supplement, or you try something new, and within 3 to 5 days, you're feeling flu-like, or the symptoms that we're trying to help clear out are exacerbated and amplified. When I talk flare, like I said, I tend to use those more in the pandas and pans world. It's, when the OCD symptoms get really, really strong again. Or, sometimes we sadly can have really restrictive eating or those OCD behaviors. Or we've gotten the tics under control, but then suddenly, their eyelids are twitching or they're shrugging their shoulders or things like that. Not brought on by a change in protocol, but brought on by a re-exposure to something. So that re-exposure is causing that inflammation and causing that reactivation of the immune system attacking itself.
Good explanation of that. I like that. I'm going to steal it from you. It's really confusing, right? Are we detoxing from something? Are we herxing from something? Are we just having a flare? Because, and even, with full moons coming around, right?
Oh,
Like a
yeah.
lot of things can flare in your body. You're not doing anything, so then we wouldn't consider that a herx. We would consider it more of a flare based on the full moon.
Right.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So, and the bioenergetic testing that you do. So, I'm a huge fan of muscle testing. Explain your type of testing and how it's similar and how it's different than muscle testing, right?
I would say it evolved a lot from some of that. The bioenergetics or EAV testing was what they were originally called. Electroacupuncture, according to Vole, was developed by a German doctor who was studying acupuncture meridians, and he realized that he could get a voltage, like he can get an electrical signal from that. And exposing the body to different stressors or toxins or pathogens, that voltage would change and it would decrease. So, kind of like how when you muscle test and you expose the body or the circuit to a pathogen or even a supplement, if you're trying to see if something is compatible with you, that will either make your muscle strength go weak or it will keep you strong. So, the bioenergetic testing is more or less a computerized way of doing that. And the benefit is we can test so many things in such a short period of time. It's exposing these low-level frequencies of these pathogens, toxins, foods, all sorts of things, and seeing if that actually is having a weakening effect on your body or if it's something that your body's not fazed by. So it's very similar in the thought process and concept of the muscle testing, but like I said, instead of having vials or supplements and test kits that you have to go through almost one by one manually, we can expedite that process with the software and the machines.
Okay, got it. And one of the reasons why I love muscle testing so much is, and I could see this happening in your clinic with the bioenergetic testing, is that it's like a progress report, right? So you go into your
Yeah.
doctor each visit, they either muscle test you or scan you, and you can, and your body's going to tell them what it needs to know. It's going to tell them what we need to work on right now. It's going to tell them what, hey, we cleared that. We don't need to work on it that way. And like you mentioned earlier, yes, we do not want to put these poor children through all this blood work, poking them with needles and, putting the fear of death in them with needles for the rest of their life. And able to scan them like that could be such a blessing for, I think, anybody, but especially for children, right? Because it's easy, it's non-invasive for them. And it's going to really allow the practitioner to know what is really going on in the body. What is, because I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel that there could be a lot of things going on in your body, but maybe not that's what's affecting you. Or maybe
Oh,
that's,
exactly.
right? Like,
Exactly.
so it could be, you can have all the blood tests in the world. You got this, this, and this, and this. But what if some of that isn't really affecting you? Like, is that what we
Right.
want to
And
address, right? And this form of testing can do
this
that.
form of testing will help prioritize what we need to address because, again, too, if we get some of those big stressors out of the way, the body can handle the smaller stressors, and we might not even have to address them at all when it comes down to it.
Right. Oh, I love it. So, Dr. Christina, you gave so many amazing free tips, right? And if my listeners have been following me at all, I always like to make sure we throw in a free tip or two because I understand the financial burden, right? And my gosh, these families that deal with it, right? Like not just them, but just the whole family. It's just heartbreaking. So can you give us any final tips on things that maybe could make it easier for your child, right? Even if it's just including how am I going to get this supplement in my child's body, or how am I going to get them to, eat. I actually, funny, I'm going to say this, but I was actually scrolling through something and a video popped up on this mother eating a whole bunch of really healthy stuff on her food, but then some general like chicken and stuff like that. And her child was sitting next to them. And it could have been a friend doing this. I don't even remember. I just recall this just popped into my head. But the mom was eating, and then all of a sudden she was not offering her child any bites. And the child wanted it. You want this, you know? And so that was a way that they got them to eat this because the mom is eating it, kind of depriving the child, right? Not pushing it on them. And all of a sudden, the child wants it because it's not being force-fed. So what kind of tips can you throw about ways to help parents get your child to do what you want?
I mean, so there's so many different dietary little tricks and things that we can, work on. At the end of the day, it really is just trying to expose them as much as you can, not necessarily forcing them, but even including them in the whole like meal process, Even my kids, if I have one that is pickier than others, and I actually see him almost light up sometimes when I say, "Hey, why don't you come help me like make a meal plan, or what do you think we should have for dinner, or let's go to the grocery store and let's find one new fruit or vegetable that you think would be a cool thing to try," and get them involved. I think that can be a huge step because they just don't want to. I mean, I don't think they want to feel like things are forced on them. They want to participate in that. So getting them involved and trying new recipes or trying new things, new foods. And I know for sometimes even the pickiest eaters don't think you have to saute broccoli to get your kid to eat broccoli. Sometimes it's not the food, it's the texture of the food. So experimenting with different ways. And honestly, the funny thing is so many kids who are like the picky eaters that won't eat any of their, fruits and vegetables, we can get them to open up a bag of frozen vegetables and they'll actually eat it. Frozen broccoli, frozen, carrots or green beans. So it's not so much the food, but it's the texture that they're lacking in something that's cooked or potentially even raw, that if we're adding the frozen element to it, they like it then. So be creative, get them to try different ways, include them. And then I'm not against finding different recipes that sneak things in, blend your vegetables with tomato sauce or zucchini muffins and things like that. Which, smoothies, different popsicles that you can pre-make. Those can be great ways to put like liquid tinctures into remedies or into those foods. I always preface with do that with like an ounce or two of the smoothie and have them drink that first and then give them the rest of it.
Don't ruin the whole thing, right?
Don't ruin the whole thing or have them make the whole thing and then they drink 5 sips of it and then you're dumping the most expensive smoothie down the drain. But yeah, I mean, just all these little things with, let's make, popsicles and then they get to have a popsicle every day, but it's got, a dose of all their remedies in there. There are certain supplements that I like to add in that actually help mask the taste of things too. So sometimes you can find different remedies that can actually have a little bit of a dual purpose benefit. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is kind of including them. And what if they're old enough, really just explaining, like, these are the things that we need to, we're trying so that you can actually feel better, And a lot of times if they feel bad enough, they're willing to try whatever, And
Right.
as long as they feel like they're participating in it, I think it helps a lot.
I do. I've heard that from other pediatric practitioners about, and there is that fine line, the age group, how old, how much do you tell them? But I love all of those ideas about, I mean, I remember going in and helping my mom bake in the kitchen when I was a kid, and it was a fun thing to do. And so if you're allowing your child to come up with what do we want to use or what do we want to make, like it just makes it all the more fun, right? So yeah, there are so many, it's just so many good tips. Like truly, I cannot thank you for just opening your heart and sharing just all the things and all the ways that you help your parents to be able to treat their children, right? And so I feel like you're a safe haven for so many of those children. And I'm thankful that you're in the community doing what you're doing and helping them. And this was just fabulous. So, did we miss anything? Any last thing you want to add, or did we kind of touch on everything? I feel like I could talk to you for hours.
There's so many details, but I always tell, I always like to end talking to people, in appointments or on different, podcasts, is just to remind parents in particular, it's going to be okay. Like, yes, whether it's Lyme that's, affecting joints or behavior, or we're in this autoimmune state with pandas and pans, or really anything. Don't freak out. It's going to be a little bit of a journey, and there's going to be things that we need to do, but healing is possible. And for kids in particular, it happens so much faster
So much
than
more
with
resilient,
adults.
right?
They're so much more resilient. They just bounce right back. So, yeah, when you're in the thick of it's not fun and it can be scary, but just know there's light at the end of the tunnel, and then and you will it will be okay.
Yes, I love that. And just for the parents, it's a journey for you too, right? So give yourself grace. We
Oh
all
yeah.
need to give ourselves grace during this journey because it's not easy, but it can be done. And there's so many blessings from Lyme that came to my life from going through my journey. And so many times, depending on the age of your child, obviously, but there's many, many things that they can carry on into their adulthood life that they can learn on this journey. So we can
Oh
always
yeah.
come up with something positive out of, a bad situation. So yes, I love your final words. They can heal, and it's a process. It's a journey. It's not easy, right? We're not going to snap our fingers, but man, kids do certainly bounce back much faster than us older people, right?
They do. And then they have the tools and resources from an early age, like you said, to carry that on for the rest of their life, so they don't hopefully ever have to really deal with anything like this again. And God forbid something does, affect them, they know what to do. They're
They
equipped with
have the
the
information, the
knowledge.
tools, the knowledge. Yes, it really is a blessing. So, Dr. Christina, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time and just sharing all the tips. This is just packed full of so much great information. So thank you again for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible.
So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.